Good to be with you today. It's going to be two important lessons this morning and tonight. And first off, I want to mention what the lesson is going to be tonight that Jonathan will be presenting. He had talked about this type of thing last week on a related subject, and somebody asked him a question about it further. What does victory over temptation look like? And so Jonathan says, last time we talked about a very practical step for having victory over temptation, reading and storing God's word in our hearts. What does that look like? Does it mean we will never sin again? How do I know that I'm having biblical victory over temptation? That's what we're going to be talking about tonight. So that'll be 5 o'clock tonight. Hope you're there. And this morning, yesterday, if you were outside, you probably noticed that it was a beautiful, beautiful day. And there's a reason for that. We sang just a minute ago, look at 208. Verse 1. For the beauty of the earth. And then verse 2. For the beauty of each hour, of the day and of the night, hill and vale and tree and flower, sun and moon and stars of light. One thing that was beautiful about yesterday was that the sun was out. And not just was the sun out, but you see, here's the sun and we orbit it once a year, but as we orbit it, it tilts and we are tilting toward the sun. So if you recall a couple months ago when it was cold, that was because at parts of the year we have tilted away from the sun. And that's real nice for Australia, but it kind of makes it cold up here. We're now tilting toward the sun. And so we get our seasons. It's a magnificent thing. And we're going to be talking about this morning, first off, the light of the world, part one. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. That should be 1-2, not 2-1. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. There are some things in Genesis 1 I don't understand that we're not going to be getting into. God's choice of making light before he made the sun, and some things about the firmament. One advantage of making light first is that way we don't have to wait till it travels to get here. The stars are a long, long, long ways away if the light isn't made first. But that's not really going to be our topic. We're going to be talking about this part in Genesis 1, verse 16 and 19. On the fourth day, God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, a fourth day. Now, that big, beautiful ball of fire up there that we really take for granted, I want you to really think about today and appreciate and find out a little bit about it. From sun up to sun down to during the day, we really need this thing. Here's some facts about the sun. How big is the sun? Well, you go outside, well, it's about that big. Well, it's, of course, it's kind of interesting that when we get, I've forgotten the word, eclipses. In the sky, often our moon and sun look about the same size, and they're nowhere near the same size at all. The earth is significantly, the moon is significantly smaller than the sun. The sun is immensely bigger than the earth. It is 864,000 some odd miles across. It is so large that about 1,300,000 planet Earths could fit inside it. Now, that's if you squish them. If you leave them separate balls with a lot of airspace in there, it might be less than a million. But if you pack them in, 1,300,000 planet Earths could fit inside the sun. It contains 99.86 of all the mass in our entire solar system. Now, we're not talking about the Milky Way galaxy. That's a bigger thing. We're not talking about the universe. That's a bigger thing. We're talking about our solar system. Almost 99.9% of our solar system is just the sun. It's that big. This will illustrate that little dot under the word Earth. That's not where the Earth is. The Earth is 93 million miles away, but in this picture, they put it over there. And you see, it fits like a speck underneath a solar flare going on there. The sun is absolutely huge. This is some kind of to give you a perspective. This is not perspective on how far out they are, because they're way, way, way far out there. But it just kind of gives you the size. How hot is the sun? Well, I don't know that the scientists know for sure. There's a lot of things that they estimate. Like when they say how hot it is at the center of the sun, I kind of suspect that they might not know exactly. But by their estimates, the surface is about 10,000 Fahrenheit. In the core, they say like 27 million Fahrenheit. And then in the corona, the stuff going out around the edges, they say millions of degrees. How far away is the sun? Well, it's about 93 million miles away, which means with the speed of light, which is what light travels at, it takes a little over 8 minutes to reach the Earth. So when you see a sunrise, it actually rose 8 minutes ago. When you see a sun setting, it actually set about 8 minutes ago. And how does the Earth to sun relationship compare to other planets? Again, here, this is size of scale, but not distance of scale. To give you an idea of distance, we one time as a homeschool project took the Bingham kids, my kids, and maybe some of you when you were a little bitty, in the backyard years ago, and we did this, and we had one person with a flashlight up at the edge of my patio, and that represented the sun, and we'd measured it all out. And so the first planets, like Mercury, Venus, Earth, they were around the lilac bush, so down in this area down here, and there would be like a dot in one of the students' hands, just an ink dot. And then to get to Jupiter and Saturn, that was down near the volleyball court, so out there in the vestibule. And then I think it was Ben Bingham was Pluto back before it got its membership revoked. And he was back, you know, by the orchard, so like the far side of the parking lot out there. It's really spread out. You'll never see a picture that shows you the solar system because there's so much empty space between all those little dots. So this picture isn't to size or scale because they're all kind of similar size here, but just to identify about the first three or four planets. Mercury. We don't want to live on Mercury. It's closer to the sun. We're about 96 million. Mercury varies a lot because it's got an elliptical orbit. We do a little bit too, but it averages about 36 million. So if we're about this far away, Mercury's about this far away. And it's got a real slow rotation. So we spin around once every 24 hours. Have you noticed in the summertime, around noon, 1 o'clock, it's getting hot, right? If it's a really hot day, you're kind of looking forward to what? That sun starts going down. And then after the sun goes down, it starts getting cold. Well, the rotation that we have works really well. It's 24 hours. So we get warmed up, we get cooled down. We get warmed up, we get cooled down. You don't get that on Mercury. One day takes 1,400 hours. So it spins really, really slowly. Which means on one side, it's about 800 degrees Fahrenheit. And on the other side, it's like about 280 degrees below zero. That would not be a place that we would want to live. Now, Franz is shaking his head. No, I agree. I don't want to be there at all. Venus is even hotter than Mercury, even though it's farther away from the sun. It's about 67 million miles away. So if we're out here and Mercury's here, here's Venus. And it's also got a very slow rotation, very little tilt. Mercury also has very little tilt. But it's got such a heavy, heavy, heavy atmosphere that they have a super greenhouse effect. And the heat that does go there just stays. And day and night, even though it's a slow rotation, are both hot. Average temperature on Venus, 864 degrees Fahrenheit. So if any of you kids are planning on, I want to be an astronaut and be the first guy to go to Venus. No, you don't. You don't want to do that. Mars, on the other side of us, so 141 miles out. Due to a very thin atmosphere, it doesn't retain its heat. So average temperature is about 80 below. At the poles, in its winter, it can get 195 degrees below zero. But in the summer, near its equator, it can get to be 70 degrees. Okay? So kind of similar to weather about now. But at night, the temperature can plummet to 100 below zero. Because it doesn't have, its atmosphere is like 100 times thinner than the Earth. So the Earth, God made it, it's got the right distance, the right rotation, the right tilt, the right atmosphere to support life in seasons. That doesn't mean it's evolution. Say, oh, so that's just you're going to get life there. I heard a guy one time on the being interviewed on the news, and they said, we're looking for water on Mars because we found a high correlation of water and life. Yeah, that's a small sampling ratio. We've got one planet here where we know we have life. He said, you need heat and water to make life. No, you need heat and water to make hot water. You need God to make life. But God made life on a planet that's in the right circumstances for that. So it is the light of this world. It is the center of the solar system. And by the way, if it wasn't there, it's what causes us to orbit. All these planets are it's because of the gravity of the sun that we're in the orbits that we are. Without it, off we go spinning away. And without it is death. What would happen? God's got stars all over the universe. He's got smaller ones, much bigger ones. It's a medium-sized star. What if God just took our one little sun and went, psst, and put it out? What would happen? Well, for 8 minutes, you wouldn't know. Because we'd still be saying, hey, it's a nice sunshiny day. And then suddenly, whoop. And then suddenly there'd be nothing to hold us in our orbit. And then scientists say, oh, life could survive around the thermal vents, you know, in the sea. Well, if you're some microorganism at the bottom of the sea, you know, you might have it good for a while. But you and I are in trouble. We're gone. Temperatures, of course, are going to plummet. There's no photosynthesis. So what's going to happen to the plants? They're going to die. You say, well, I'll be a carnivore. Well, guess what carnivores kind of need to eat? Somebody along the line of the food chain needs to be eating plants. And, of course, we're all going to freeze to death. We die. Are we thankful for the sun? Yeah. And this time of year, we're really thankful for it. But it's a good thing it's out there all the time. The Light of the World, Part 2. John chapter 1 also begins with the words, in the beginning. Genesis begins with God sending one son, and John 1 begins with God sending another son. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that has been made. In him was life, and look at it. What was that life in verse 4? The light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness apprehended it not. There came a man sent from God whose name was John. That's John the Baptist. The same came for witness, that he might bear witness of the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came that he might bear witness of the light. There was the true light, even the light which lights every man, coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world knew him not. He came to his own, and those that were his own received him not. And as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those that believe on his name, who are born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. Glory as of the only begotten from the Father. 2 Peter 1:19 talks about that the prophecies of the Old Testament were like little dim lights shining until the day star arises in our hearts. You remember the Ethiopian eunuch when he's reading Isaiah 53 about someone going to, you know, be slaughtered as a sheep before its shears is dumb, and who is this? And his life is taken away, and for the transgressions, etc. Who is this? And Philip, beginning this verse, preached to him Jesus. And he said, "Here's some water. What does hinder me from being baptized?" And he stopped the chariot and went down, and then went on his way rejoicing. Luke chapter 2, verse 32. When Jesus is a baby, Simeon, the old prophet that's at the temple, when Joseph and Mary come to do the ceremonies they need to do there at the temple, he sees the baby and he takes the baby because he had been promised that he would not die until he saw the Lord's Christ. And he took that child and he talked about him, and he said that he would be a light to the Gentiles. We got any Gentiles in here today? Who's our light? And in Matthew chapter 4, verse 16, quoting from the Old Testament, that it would come from about him coming from up in Nazareth, that area. It said that it might be fulfilled which was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, saying, "The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, toward the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people sat in darkness, but they saw a great light." And Jesus says in John 8:12, again, Jesus spoke to him saying, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." If the sun was the light of the world and the center of our solar system, and without it is death, how much more so Jesus? Where would you be without Jesus Christ? Now, someday, that ball of fire, it's going to be gone. But where would you be without Jesus Christ? I don't know where I'd be. I have a feeling I might not be around. And if I was around, for what point? And to what end in damnation? Where would you personally without Jesus Christ? But it's a bright light, and not everybody likes it. John 3:19-21, "This is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people loved the darkness rather than the light." Why? Why would somebody love the darkness rather than the light? Because their deeds were evil, for their works were evil. Everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light. Like cockroaches, you know. You turn on the light and the cockroaches scurry. Whoever does what is true comes to the light, so that men be clearly seen that his works have been carried out in God. And I'll tell you what, when we realize we're lost and when we realize we're in darkness, we want light. You know, if a person is lost in the woods, if a person is lost at sea, and after a few days or a few hours or whatever, they see a light, you're headed to that light. You're headed to that light. When people realize that they're in trouble and they're in darkness, they will be drawn to light. But there are other people that want to be in darkness, and they want to avoid the light. In fact, there have been some studies. Time magazine had a thing, why shady deeds are more likely to happen in the dark. There's always been a correlation between how we ethically behave and how brightly our surroundings are lit. Criminals like darkness. That's why probably some of you have safety lights on your house, right? A motion detected and a light comes on. What does that do? The burglar, he sees that light and he goes another way. But there have been some tests. There was a study back in 69. I'm not going to read all these. I'll just kind of sum it up. One of them, back in 1969, they had people set up where they could administer electric shocks to other people. And they're being studied is whether or not they choose to do it and how many times. Some, they had them outfitted differently. If they gave you a hood and baggy clothes, guess what? Those people, because you felt more anonymous. Other tests, some like testing your honesty or fairness, like you're doing math problems and they give you some money and when you get it right, you get to take some money out. When you don't, you leave it in the envelope. Did it in two different rooms. In a room with a lot of bright lights, the people were more honest. In the room where there were only four light bulbs, there was still plenty of light. You could do it, but guess what? Just the decrease of light decreased the honesty. There was just more taken. And another one, just on fairness, where you're controlling some money with another person on the other side of the screen and you decide how to split it with the money. If you're where they gave some people sunglasses and some people clear glasses. The people wearing the sunglasses who felt they couldn't be seen as well were greedier. Just in all sorts of ways, psychologists or whatever have done tests like this and seen that we're just more prone to, do what's evil if we think we're not being seen. The Light of the World, Part 3. Did God go to a lot of trouble to send the Son back in the first place? Why? I say a lot of trouble. He's God. But is what he did magnificent and powerful? And does he expect a lot out of that ball of fire up there? When God sent his Son into this world, did he expect a lot of him? All right, some of you see where this is going. What do you think point three of this sermon is going to be? Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said what to his disciples? You are the light of the world. That's a big job. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand. And it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. But just as Jesus said to the disciples in John 17, the world hated me because I was not of the world, it's going to hate you. When you let your light shine, there's going to be people that will not like it. And they will hate you for it. Did they hate Jesus? They crucified him. There will be people that will hate you for standing for what's right and being a light. But that doesn't change your job or my job. We are to be lights to this world. And this world is a dark place. Is light supposed to be noticed? Now, you know what? On a bright Sunday morning, bunch of Christians in here, I want you to imagine everybody in here has a flashlight, okay? All right, Dan has a flashlight, Franz has a flashlight, Leanna has a flashlight, Ben's got a flashlight. We've all got our flashlights on. And we got all these lights here and all that light in there. Is anybody going to notice a whole lot if I put my light under a bushel? If you're looking right at me, but you're not going to necessarily notice that, right? Now, imagine it's pitch dark, it's midnight, there's no moon, and it's overcast. And Ben turns on a flashlight. How many of us are going to notice that? Because everything else is dark. And that light is going to stand out, right? That's our job in the world. When we're around the world, we need to have our light on. And you know what you can't be doing? What we can't be doing? Say we come to church and we crank our light way up high. Sunday morning, I want that light shine like, and then time to go back into the world. How low can I get it? You know, and nobody notices that there's a light there. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand that gives light to all that are in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Let me give one caveat here. This doesn't mean that every occasion is the right time and place to make a statement about the gospel. You know, if you are a medical assistant helping a surgeon, you know, doing surgery, and you know, he says, scalpel, and you said, well, what do you think about the button? that's not the time or the place. It's your workplace. There's going to be sometimes rules about discussions and things like that. Understand, when you're at work, you've got responsibilities at work, but that doesn't mean you still can't be a light. Because in a lot of jobs, there are conversations that can and do go on, and there are lots of conversations going on about wicked and vile things. And do you choose to laugh at it? Go along with it? When people talk about, oh yeah, it's important that you know, we protect the right to have abortions. It's just killing babies is what that is. Do we just stand there and say nothing and be quiet? There's a movie I would recommend. I haven't seen it yet, but what I'm hearing about it looks really good, Unplanned. And it's about a woman that was a director of a Planned Parenthood unit. And at one time been in the Planned Parenthood, whatever, of the year. And when she started realizing and thinking about what she was doing, she switched. And we need to be lights in the world out there, helping people to see the difference between dark and light. That was an important light. Jesus is the light of the world, but as his disciples, it's now our job to do what he said to do. 2 Corinthians 6:14, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. What fellowship has light with darkness? Ephesians 5:8, for at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. And 1 Peter 2:9, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. And tonight, Jonathan will be talking about this text. I'm going to just read it without comment, and then we'll get to, I think, our last slide. 1 John chapter 1, verse 6. If, brethren, we say that we have fellowship with him, and we walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. And the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin. Put on the armor of light. Stop blending in with darkness if you have been. And let's go out and let's be lights. If you need to respond in any way, I want you to do so as we stand and sing.